Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 24th day of March, 2015. It is 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and you are tuned in to WC, A Woman with CP Network, here on Blog Talk Radio. This network is run by best-selling author Wynne Kelly Charles, and the program that she provides live for you every Monday and Tuesday at this time is called Women of Wisdom. On Women of Wisdom today, Wynne Kelly Charles welcomes speech designer and idea architect Dr. Michelle Mazur. Dr. Michelle believes that every presentation should be an experience and that the only thing that stands between you and success is giving your ideas a voice. She is the CEO of Communication Rebel and will be sharing her encouraging energy with everyone on the program today. We direct you to her website, Dr. Michelle, two L's please, Mazur, M-A-Z-U-R, drmichellemazur.com for more information and to get your copy of her powerful tool, The Audience Journey. Without any further ado, we welcome the host of the program, Wynne Kelly Charles, and her guest, Dr. Michelle Mazur.
Thank you, Annette, and I'm blessed enough to have Dr. Michelle with me tonight. And one of the things we talked about before coming on live tonight is why Michelle hates selling from the stage. And I quote that because I'm about to do selling from the stage myself. And I want to know why that every motivational speaker I know does selling from the stage, unless they're speaking at a college. And I want to know why Dr. Michelle hates that.
I am so happy you've asked me that, Wynne. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Yeah, I do hate selling from the stage for multiple reasons. So the first is I view myself as a passionate advocate of the audience. That's the role I take in my work when I work with speakers, and even when I'm designing my own presentations, I advocate for the audiences. And one thing I know that audiences are tired of, in fact, they're sick to death of it, is selling from the stage, because it has become so commonplace now that there are formulas out there that you can spend lots of money to learn, sell from the stage. And from the audience's point of view, we know that's coming. Like, we've seen it enough now to know that when you get to the end of the presentation, you're going to direct me to run to the back of the room or overwhelm me with so much information that I get fatigued by all the decisions and don't want to go forward. So it's come to a point where it's almost manipulative of the audience, because honestly, the speaker at that point in time doesn't have the relationship developed with the audience in order to make that kind of ask. Because I always liken a speech to a first date. Now, imagine that you met someone online and you were meeting for coffee at your local Starbucks and it was going great. You were laughing, you were learning about the other person, you're getting something from the conversation. And then all of a sudden they whip out a piece of paper that's a mortgage form and says, "Hi, so tell me what your social security number is, because I found the cutest house for us to live in and spend the rest of our day."
Exactly. I, for those of you who don't know, I've been doing Women of Wisdom / motivational speaking for quite a while now, and I consider myself the coffee shop interviewer. I don't set myself up to give a speech. I set myself up to present to the audience, because the last thing the audience wants to see is a person looking at their notes, and that doesn't make a very good speech. So 9 times out of 10, I personally leave my speech notes in a vehicle. So Mm-hmm. I don't have access to my speech notes. And people laugh at me all the time because they're like, Wynn, you have cerebral palsy. How can you do it without notes? And I say, well, I know my story, so I can do it without notes. And so would that be something that isn't selling from the stage?
Oh, I would say, you know, selling from the stage is really about pitching a product or coaching. What you're doing is, I love the fact that you don't use notes, especially since you have cerebral palsy, because when you don't use notes, you're focused on connecting with the audience and building that relationship. Because when we use notes or even PowerPoint, I think, or Prezi or whatever you're using, that gets in the way of starting that relationship with the audience. Because if the experience you want to create for your audience is that coffee shop experience, then it's important for you just to show up without those notes and just be the best Wynn you can be in that moment.
Yes. And when I speak at one of the top universities in the country, they automatically ask me, do you have a PowerPoint? And it's like, no, I don't have a PowerPoint because I am so sick of sitting, watching lectures over the years of people wanting to sell from the stage, wanting to talk about their story and not interact with the audience and look at the PowerPoint. So what would you say to people who are not like you and I and Annette and haven't done radio hosting or haven't done public speaking and they're listening thinking, those three are nuts. Those three are nuts. I won't ever leave notes in a vehicle. Those three are absolutely nuts. What? Are they trying to get me out of my comfort zone? And yes, we are. And so when I say that, what do you tell to people who are PowerPoint presenters?
Well, honestly, I don't mind PowerPoint. But the trick is that PowerPoint shouldn't be a substitute for you as a speaker at all. The PowerPoint should enhance your message. So that means you shouldn't be reading from your PowerPoint word for word, and that you should have visuals that reinforce what you want to say. Because it's fine, like, leave your notes in the car or bring them up to the podium if that makes you more comfortable, but you shouldn't be hiding behind the notes, behind your PowerPoint or your technology, because presentations really are about that relationship building and that connecting, and technology, when used not appropriately, gets in the way of that connection.
I agree. And so what would the first steps be for a new motivational speaker who's used to hiding behind the PowerPoint and hiding behind a set of speech notes? And what would the first step you would recommend to them to break them out of their shell?
Ah, that's a great question. So the first step I would recommend is realizing that public speaking is not about you, and start getting focused on the audience. Because when I work with speakers, my first session with them is all about coming up with their presentation strategy. And one of the most important questions that a speaker can answer for the audience, especially when they're first starting out, they should answer the question, as a result of hearing me speak, how should my audience change? And then when you start focusing on the change you want to create for your audience, it becomes easier to step away from the technology and the notes and realize that everything you're doing on the stage, every word you're saying, you're doing it for the audience and not for yourself.
They're glomming on to what you say. The last time I motivational spoke was at one of the top universities in the country, and I'm not kidding. About 10 people glommed on to what I had to say because I did it with no notes whatsoever. I looked straight at them even though I had a video camera on me, which that's another tip that we're going to get into. Should people videotape their speeches?
I believe you should videotape your speeches. So there's a couple of issues here to think about. So there is videotaping your speech for your own personal use. So that could be you videotape your speech because you want to improve and get better. And the best way to start improving is by watching yourself, as painful as that might be. I get it. But I think that's a very powerful way to pick up on things that you might not know that you're doing on stage. So that's great. Also, if you want to get paid as a speaker, you need something, you need a sizzle reel. You need a video of you speaking and interacting with the audience. And when you're videoing, I would highly recommend that you pretend like the camera's not even there. And
that's
still all about the audience.
That's what I do. And I'm more seasoned, even though I'm training to do this. But I feel like forget the video camera. Just focus on the audience or the interviewer and just focus on the task at hand. But for those of us who have stage fright and are scared enough to look in a video camera on a laptop, what would you recommend?
Oh, for people who are, yeah. So if you have anxiety around speaking or being on camera or, you know, even doing videos, like that can be really intimidating. And honestly, looking at a laptop camera is scary because, you know, with an audience, you have people to bounce. To bounce your energy off of. You have people who are smiling and reassuring you in that audience. But when you're just looking at a camera, that's one of the hardest things because you don't have the energy. You're not getting that energy exchange. So what I would recommend is preparation is key. Like, preparing, knowing what you want to say, practicing what you want to say. The more prepared you are, the more confident you'll feel. And there is nothing that replaces good preparation.
I'm sorry, but I agree with you on that. There's nothing that replaces good preparation, because the last thing you want to hear is and dead air, and it's like no, we're walking out of the room because you are not prepared to speak, and so when people do and like, and drives me crazy. How do you suggest that people stop that habit?
Yeah. So there's a few suggestions, and I will say this at first. A few ums or likes aren't going to kill you. It's when it's habitual. So I had a professor in college who every other word literally said, okay, okay. And it was so annoying because I know it's so awful. But what's happening and why we use filler words, and this is important to understand, is we use filler words as a crutch. And it's usually when we're switching gears. So when we're transitioning from point to point, we put in an so that there's no silence. So practicing those transition points, but also knowing that there's a beauty in pausing and silence. Speakers, especially new speakers, are so afraid of silence because they feel like they have to fill up every last second they have. And a pause is a gift to your audience because it allows them to process what you've been saying and catch up with you. So pause
and then
we transition.
And then we can carry on. And then we can carry on because a group of professional women, for example, that I'll be speaking in front of in North Carolina, won't necessarily like the ums and likes. And it's fairly annoying. So what you guys have to do is pause and then carry on. And for those who don't know what we're actually talking about, what would you say to the new professional speaker who wants to try that, the pause method, and just say, what would you say to them? How would you get these new professional speakers in a habit of pausing and gathering thoughts?
Yeah, it's funny. So becoming aware of your ums and likes and filler words is the first step. Awareness is key because you have to figure out what triggers those ums. So tape yourself, like just even audio tape. You don't even need to videotape it. So the next presentation that you give, audio it. And then listen, and listen for where you end up inserting ums. And 9 times out of 10, it'll be when you have to think about your message. Because if you're in the flow, it is so easy just to keep going. But as soon as you have to change your thought, then, wow, that's where an is going to crop up. And so identify it first. And then you'll start understanding how your brain works. So you know, okay, I'm going to be transitioning from my main point to the story. Uh-oh, there might be an here. So instead, go, you'd say your main point, get that done, pause, take a breath, and then go into the story.
And that leads me to my next question. Why do you like storytelling so much?
So storytelling to me is essential in public speaking for a number of reasons. And I'm going to say it's essential with a little bit of a caveat or a little bit of a twist. Human beings are wired for story. And I'm sure almost everyone in your audience has had an experience of staying up all night to finish a book, or a movie that they love is on TV and they think, I'm just going to watch a couple of minutes of this, and then they end up watching the whole entire movie. Because our brains are wired for story, and when we see a compelling story, we want to know what's going to happen next. And that is exactly what you need to hook your audience in. One of my favorite people is a woman named Sally Hogshead, and she says that we only have 9 seconds to capture someone's attention. So a story is a great way to capture our attention and engage our brains. And with that in mind, I'm also going to say the next important step of the story is that it needs to always, to be effective, relate back to your audience. Because remember, we talked about public speaking is not about you. Well, your story is also not about you. What is the takeaway that your audience gets from that story? It's kind of like a fable or fairy tale. What's the moral of the story? What are they going to get out of the story? And when you can point that out to your audience, it becomes more interactive to them. So storytelling is a wonderful key to engage a person's brain, but also give them an actionable piece of advice to take or to implement into their lives.
I agree. Now, how I'm doing my speech in North Carolina, for those of you who do not know, I am going down to North Carolina doing this women's empowerment speech, and the speaking topic they gave me is overcoming adversity and rejection in the workplace. Now, what I have decided to do is do a 50-50 split on my story with cerebral palsy, and then move on to the speaking topic, and then move back into my story. And now that leads me to my next question. How should people set up speeches? Is what I just explained, for what I'm doing, a good way to set up speeches? Or should people set up speeches completely differently?
Oh, so there are many ways to set up a speech. There's no one right way, but you can find the way that works best for you and, more importantly, that works best for the audience. So one suggestion that I would make for your speech is figuring out how you can take your story and weave it in and out of the main topic. So it's like, yes, I agree, you need to tell your story at the beginning so the audience can get to know you. But then if you can pepper throughout some of the, you know, overcoming adversity takeaways that people can use in the workplace, that will make it powerful because you'll have a nice combination of story and content. And because we have such a short attention span, switching it up between story and content will keep your audience more engaged with you. So there are lots of ways to create a speech and create a presentation. And really, it's also about experimenting and finding the one that works best for the audience.
Yes. Well, yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. It's easier to infuse your story into what you're trying to get across.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are bored with the average Joe speaking the same speaking topic over and over and over again. It doesn't stimulate brains long enough to hold people's attention spans. And with my disability, I happen to have a long attention span, but I get bored very easily if I hear monotonous stories over and over again. And she's laughing at me because she knows it's the God-honest truth. And I think most people are like that. I don't care if you're disabled or not. We shut down if we hear the same thing over and over again. So that's a great tip for me and everyone else. And how can people get in contact with you?
Sure. Well, I am at Dr. Michelle Mazur, so Dr. Michelle with two L's, Mazur, MAZUR.com. And over on my website, I have a free tool that helps speakers come up with the final thought or the last words of their presentation, because that is the most important part of your speech, because that's the battle cry you leave your audience with, and they can get that at the website. It's called The Audience Journey, and I would love to connect with them.
And how much does it cost to work with you privately?
So there are lots of different options for working with me privately. Briefly, I do a program called the Speaking Collective, which is open for enrollment right now. And that's a small group mastermind training program that lasts for 3 months. And that's either $167 a month or $450 for the option. And it's awesome because it's a group of like-minded speakers who are all working towards speaking goals and getting their message out into the world so that they can make an impact.
Well, as I said, we had a wonderful conversation today, and I am lucky enough to secure you on Women of Wisdom, and I am lucky enough to have access to now you and your resources myself. And I'm going to turn it back over to Annette.
Thank you very much, Michelle Mazar and Wynn Kelly Charles, for an absolutely fascinating program. If anybody out there is looking for more information on how to become or perfect being an absolutely engaging and admirable or admirable, whichever way you pronounce the word, public speaker, you definitely want to go to www.drmichellemazur.com, Dr. Michelle Mazur, and there will be plenty of great information to absorb, as well as you'll be able to pick up a copy of her powerful tool, The Audience Journey. If you would like more information on our host, Wynn Kelly Charles, visit her website at wynncharles.com. And we also appreciate the fact that you follow this program on her network, blogtalkradio.com/WC A Woman with CP. Thank you so much for being part of the show. The show is live every Monday and Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, here on the WC A Woman with CP Network.